In the second part of Behind the Scenes at the Museum with Chris Thompson, which was recorded at the Open Air Museum in Beamish, County Durham, in August, we open by discussing the harness room next to the stables, which has some beautiful stage sets in it, which formerly belonged to the Duke of Norfolk's family. The harness room itself originates from Killaloe Castle in Northumberland and has some of the original Musgrave fittings in it. We get on to subjects such as coaching and Chris's passion for it, fueled by his involvement with the Nicholson family and their Gelderlanders. We talk about hero road coaches, a trip to Toronto, Ian Smith, Joe Thompson, and the museum being used as a film set for Catherine Cookson adaptations. Enjoy. I was really struck by the harness room. Is that the Nicholson State harness that's in there? So where's the fancy harness from?
The harness room itself is mainly from Killaloe Castle.
Where's that? Is that quite nearby?
In Northumberland, in the attic. So Killaloe Mayor is private residence. It was carved up into apartments. And the stables were cleared out and made into apartments. So the harness room and part of the stable fittings in the box were from Killaloe.
That's interesting, yes.
So in there you've got a mixture of Musgrave fittings.
Yes.
And Dinning and Cup of the Ocasa.
Yeah.
Well, the Dinning and Cup of the Ocasa came from the Killaloes. The Musgraves came from another, somewhere on the coast, I'm not quite sure where.
Yeah.
And we were brought together to make what's in there. Connection, if you like, extends further than just the harness. Some photographs of the way that the stables were set out. So the basics is taken from Killaloe, but then it was altered because Nicholson Breweries wanted to come in and make it for their shine. So they had to make a bit at the front slightly wider.
Yeah.
But then you only had the shell to work within, so it was kind of a bit of a mismatch.
Yeah.
But it works anyway. But no, the harness and the harness room itself. The stuff on the left, as you go into the...
Yes.
That is the Duke of Norfolk.
Really? I have to look at those crests, because that looks pretty smart. That would have been used in the coronation, wouldn't it?
That was used during Victoria's Diamond Jubilee procession. And there's different sets, so there's a state set, semi-state.
Yes.
And it comes down in line.
Yes, yes.
And there's two cabinets worth of that. But I also have another four sets upstairs in the upstairs harness room.
And when was it all last used?
Never been used together.
Yeah.
I did think about using it once. I just thought I didn't want to bust anything and... Most of them don't have bridles.
Mm-hmm.
They've disappeared over the years. Not here yet, but obviously over the thing. Because somebody's used a bridle for something else and hasn't been returned.
Yeah, it's amazing you've got so much of it together because things do go missing, don't they?
It's all in a big heap. And originally when it was built, it was in the harness room.
Right.
But then when Nicholson's came across, we had the shore harness and their second best harness.
For the coaching.
So that went into those two cabinets.
Yes, yes.
So when Sir Paul sold the coach and the harness went, I went and got the harness and it was all piled up in the store. Mm. So I resorted it and put it all back in the set. And then we had some incorrect military saddles, but I put them out as a postillion set so that people could see the difference of harnesses when they came in. So that was more or less the best of what was there that I made into those to fit those cabinets.
It's really interesting because actually each item, if you're interested in harness and everything, it's absolutely beautiful. I mean, it's so ornate, some
that's
of it.
It's fantastic. Oak leaf on the eaves and it's you'd never get it made now. It would cost a fortune. It's beautiful when you clean it up.
I bet it is.
For that white metal fittings, there's a high cutting of silver.
Yeah.
It was what you used to call German silver.
Yeah.
So it had a high content.
That's
when you clean it, it comes up.
That's a dove.
Well, it takes a bit of cleaning with a toothbrush to get into all the little leaves and acorns.
Well, they had a lot of staff to do it back in the day, didn't they? That would have been somebody's full-time job, possibly, just cleaning out, as you say, the oak leaves, getting little old bits
of grease out. It was a pure thing, or originally had on top of the house. It was a threaded, like a turret.
Yeah.
And it was reputed to have had solid silver coronets on top.
Okay, could well have done, yes.
They're gone.
Yes, because they would have been put on for smart occasions, wouldn't they? Well, it's just, isn't it just amazing that you had them? So which of the residences did the harness come up from?
Well, I'm not sure because it was collected in 1963. I think it's the date on a tab on it. Now, strangely enough, a couple of years ago, I was in the harness room when I was chatting with a guy. And he asked me the same question. About where did this come from? Yeah. Stephanie, and so that's interesting. He says, I've seen this harness.
Have you?
Yeah. He says, we've left it a little bit more for your purpose. He says, and it used to hang in the harness room in the stables. Yeah, no. So he says, well, I can remember it on the wall. He says, how did you end up with it? Before my time, he says,
yes,
63, I have no idea. He says, but I would imagine at that time when they were clearing out things like everybody else does, it was probably put up somewhere in a periodical. For did anybody have any use for it, and or a connection through somewhere else? Leave anything.
Yes,
it's bringing a connection since then, which is obviously a long way from home.
It is a long way from home, which is very gosh. You just wish you these broken threads. It's the provenance. It would be lovely to say it was here or here, and it was used. And so much guesswork involved, isn't there, in these objects? Also, I wish the carriages could talk, because if they could, probably best they don't. But how many of the vehicles as well in the collection are used? Because we're talking about charabangs.
Well, most of the things in the yard, so in the what we call cart shed behind the crimp shop.
Yes.
And the carriage house.
Yeah.
If it's at the front or in the alleyway, those are the ones we can use.
Yes.
There's an odd few towards the back that we don't use for various reasons, but they're on display. But most of them, I mean, none of them in sure condition, working condition.
Yeah, so,
It'll be used at some point, or can be used.
Yeah.
Depending on what we're doing.
And do you have the workshops and the skilled craftsmen and women on site that are able to do runner repairs, or do you have to farm it out a bit?
Really, depending on what is to be done. May I do something myself?
Yes.
As most people will do.
Yes.
But if it's major stuff, I mean, generally, over the last few years, we've had, and it's the charabangs, what they've had it because of getting constant
use. Of course, the wear and tear will be huge, yeah.
So, I've got to draw attention.
I was trying to catch up with Joe, but they were out and about. Because I haven't seen Joe for a few years. They always used to come for sales, and then they would always come down to Windsor. And Joe's got a few tasks to have as well, hasn't he?
But he's so clever. No, what he does.
He's a fantastic craftsman.
You know, he doesn't necessarily tell anybody.
Well, I think that's part of it. I was just trying to unpeel it. That was Joe. He was always kept.
Yeah. But he is really pretty good. They've been to Joe, really. So both Shadowbangs are fans. Work on the wheels and their axles and things like that. There's some wear and tear.
Yeah.
And Joe's done that.
Yeah.
So it's gone down to him and it's been there. And you don't ask a time, you just leave it.
It's the loading and unloading as much as anything. That's what knackers them.
Harder to get. It's few and far between, isn't it? I mean, there's still a few wheelwrights, isn't there?
There's wheelwrights out there, yeah. It's just having the skill to join up the restoration and the paint and the sign writing and everything, isn't it?
You certainly don't do a lot of that yourself.
I mean,
I had a carriage which I bought and then did some of the work myself. And had a local guy painter for me who does the trams here.
Well, that's what you want. You want the barge painters or the sign writers doing the other things. Yeah. And actually, because it's the same Dave Crozier, isn't it?
Well, absolutely.
Well, new for stuff, I'm thinking about something else that will come.
Well, he did the hero for Smithy and Vernon. The hero what Smithy had been in the Holland, didn't it? Yeah, but that hero that he had was a Holland Holland.
Mm-hmm.
And it went out to Holland somewhere. Because when he was doing it, I went to Crows to see it getting painted.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, you've got a picture of that other one, haven't you? I said, yeah, I was out in Toronto and Robert Weave had it in Toronto. He says, send it to us because I want to know what's on the rider. She said, all right. So anyway, I rang him and spoke to him and I said, I've been doing a bit of digging. I says, in Patterson's Road, at some point, the hero split. Its journey, it went one way and the other. So I says, Robert Weavers has got on whatever it had in. I said, at one point from Mortlake, it went up and went Musselburgh. He said, but where does it stop? I said, tells you in the quote. So I gave him the names of the inns on the Musselburgh route, and Smithy pitted them on the risers of his. So he rang me up, and I was at a wedding. And he said, we're doing that run into Brighton with Norman Brown.
Yes.
He says, get yourself down. You should get a ride on the coach. Well, I didn't have anything but a wedding suit. So I went down and had to borrow Peter Gibson's hat. These way lost bastards in them now, pushed me lid. And we did a stage on from Hawley, I think it was, or something like that.
That was the first of the sort of reruns. That was when Norman did it. Yeah, it was their first. I mean, obviously, lots of people have done lots of runs, Ewan included, since then. But that opened the door to everyone thinking, we can do this. Yeah. You know, this has become a thing again. Yeah. It was quite special because he talked about it in the Road Club when we were in the George back then, you know, when we could all fit in the George. Mm. So is coaching a real passion of yours? Is that something that you've come to really enjoy?
Yeah, well, I'd never done it till we got sort of with Nicholson.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you four horses from another, you know what I mean? I came from a background of Dale's ponies, Fell ponies, cobs, you know, trade stuff, right?
Yes, yeah.
I ran out of the fruit round. So anything bigger than 15, 2, 15, 3, we thought was a monster.
Well, it wasn't practical for the rounds, was it? So you're using native breeds to this area as...
Well, yeah, in early life, when my grandmother was there. But when I went to Vaugh, I went to Eddie Mahoney, and these two group big Percherons.
Yeah, big Percherons, weren't they?
Big lumps,
yeah. Yeah, they were big.
And
big
he said,
horses.
Get hold of this, so... And I'm like, you know,
huge,
one day I could walk under its belly.
Yeah.
And that was sort of my first encounter with something larger. And then obviously we went in and that nano horse was in the stables on Ireland. Yeah. And he could launch a bucket out of your hands without looking, off out the back door. I hadn't really done anything like that. And when I came here, Paul Bennett was sort of, he just got promoted to be in charge.
That's right. I do remember.
We'd done
it,
about a year before me in charge. Yeah. As he'd come as a trade lad for Newcastle Breweries and used to go up with a fellow called Ian of Georgie.
Really? Yeah.
So he came from agricultural college to here. And then Ian left in Paul for, in Hollis living on.
So he was living up just the
where
front of the
office is now. Where that bay window is, that's Paul's living room. So.
Is that your office there, next to the railway station sign?
Yeah, that's my office.
Well, the worst places to come to work, but that's lovely.
So, we had the leftovers in the suburban shires, but we only had one. And then we had another shire that the farm manager had bought. So they were a pair, and we had a cob horse, which came off a local Nackerman. And that's all we had.
Yeah.
So, but we didn't do rides or anything. We used to take them out in a dray or a tip cart or whatever. And then about 1998, John Gall kind of wanted to not put a coaching team together, but he wanted to do a little bit more carriagey coaching type of.
And that was about the time that there was the formal opening of the coaching, wasn't it? So it's all the focus was on that.
Yeah, because the deal had been sort of in the offing a little bit beforehand with John, that because there must have been whispers of supers who were going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, I'd been with Paul and up to prepare a Cleveland Crosses in Liverpool. It Croxteth Hall before that.
Gosh, I haven't heard that name. Croxteth Hall, that's lovely.
So we were looking at not getting rid of the shires, but moving in what we would call Vanity Forces at the thing.
Yeah.
Then we went and looked at Lofoten Hall and the Adtown Gelderlanders, which we did end up with. One was a complete screwball. Paul got them going, and we did a little bit with them, but one of them was too gassy.
And when you've got the public and it's a health and safety space,
as always, the best one colleague to be put for them. So the room one went off to the seal. And then the Vaux thing kind of gathered a bit of momentum. Mm-hmm. And that's how we ended up with two to start with. And I think they really were the quieter two that came across. And then obviously it then it snowballed and they were going to sell off. But Nicholson wanted to keep coaching.
Yeah.
And they got the coaching bosses out.
That's right, yes. Because I really wanted to sell the coaching stuff up, yeah. But we were told no, that all went
out.
But
that was a bit of a thing, wasn't it? Because it was then, well, what was Nicholson's and what was Vaux's?
I remember that very distinctly because actually when I first flew up, I was saying to Francesca, the last time I think I flew into Newcastle Airport was to actually have the initial meeting about running the auction. And of course, when we first went in there, the coaching stuff was all there. Then when we went back to do the cataloguing and everything, there were some holes in the walls. Mm.
Well, so, there was yeah. once a set of 6-in-hand breast collar harness mm-hmm. hung in there, and yeah. a brown set, hand in hand, went with each other. So when we got them, I mean, I didn't know one thing from coach until the next.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the first year, when Nick came across and we had a commitment where we had to do 10 days a year force a call.
That's right, yes, I remember.
So we would do Ask It, the Royal Show, Magazine Meet, or the Yorkshire, depending on what his schedule was like.
He always came to the Royal, actually, back in the day. Yes, that was one of his, wasn't it?
I mean, we were second 1 year at the Royal, then we won it yes. last time.
Yes, I think I was commentating.
So it was either Royal or Magazine or Yorkshire. But
he came down to Newbury when it started again.
Mm.
Remember the having the coach there, and I don't know how many years we've had it at Newbury. That's a long way, but he did come down.
Yeah, so he had 10 days, and put it, we didn't have to commit to the full 10 mm-hmm. days. It was whatever fitted with his schedule. But then we would sort of, from the turn of the year, we would come every Saturday morning and drive.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of got. And Paul Bennett did the first year with mm-hmm. Tommy and things from Vaux. And then obviously after that, Vaux had gone, Tommy had retired. It was decided to go out and look for somebody else.
Yeah.
Another guy came in, and then we all had to go and do it. So the first year of that was Adrian, Paul, and myself.
Yeah.
And then a few guy contracted in called John Owens. You probably mistaken that, like, probably more than this. And then Paul left and went down for to Nemitz.
I was at Nemitz as well.
There's a tale about that, but
didn't turn it off in a minute. I remember. I do remember that. It's funny, all these memories coming back again. I do remember him going out. Nemitz. He's still going strong, I think. Bless him. You learn a lot about coaching at Nemitz. So my goodness, that's the way to learn.
I mean, Paul used to go off to Caroline, so he would sort of. You fire a bag full of sweets out of there and he put off down the Caroline's. I went a couple of times with him and we did tandem driving with Georgina and stuff like that. And then when you get up the back of some and they're going nicely.
It's the best thing in the world, yeah.
Your blood starts to thicken and they're not going so nice, it's a different kettle of fish.
Oh.
But and the burning sensation starts to go up your arm.
And they're just not this thing that they're just like, but when they're just there, it's just... It's lovely. It is the best thing in the world. And it's just the sound and the magic and smells and the feet. And yeah.
But I love the history of it.
Yeah.
I love the characters. Like, and we used to do team on here, carrying passengers and stuff. Not possible. Neither of them, just because the code.
Mm-hmm.
And then a unicorn or do it with tandem or something, you know, just. Yeah. Because I'm in a place where it allowed me to do pretty much what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So. And even more so once Adrian there, and I became stable manager. But I quite like driving heavies. I quite like driving like a cool snow. I quite like, because you're using that. I mean, we've got to drive loads of different things. We call them experience days.
Yes.
So Jim Elliott, we still ploughing days and we do carriage plough.
Is he still doing as much ploughing as ever?
No, he's got a bad ticket.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
So he's not doing as much.
Oh, I'm sorry, because he's super, Jim, and he's been probably one of the most successful ploughmen ever.
So, I mean, I never plough. Jim showed me that. To be honest, I've done a few things with Jim, but only because Jim says, do this, do that.
But you couldn't learn. I mean, what a master to learn from. Incredible.
So, but I like doing that.
Yes.
You're away off the horses.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to work out the
It's yes, hard it's work.
But you've got to know the steer.
Yeah, and you've got to be strong.
How to give
yeah.
all, you know, and then, so there's that. But then just learning different things and picking up different things, but it allows you to look at, I suppose, like five loss, isn't it? It allows yeah. you to look at them differently.
You're always learning.
And unlock that.
Yeah, always learning.
You know, change yeah. a bit. Shape, put it different ways. Yes, at home, put it up, put it down, put it upside, yeah. do whatever you want.
Yeah.
What you were saying about before about listening, yeah. when we used to do experience days and meetings, yeah. listen, you don't go away from me with the ticket to say you can do them. You haven't
yeah,
passed
yeah.
the test.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
is just an experience.
Yeah.
I can tell you my thoughts, mm. but I can give you guidance. Yeah. How you use them if that's up to you.
Yeah.
But when you get them driving, I used to always chat to them all the time.
Yes.
Because they're not watching math.
Yeah.
They're doing it, but not realising.
Yeah.
We said, right, listen. Okay.
Yeah.
They're going nice
and relax. Drop your shoulders. Just relax. And it's things that come instinctively to the rest of us because we've done it for such a long time. But and it is interesting seeing somebody novice coming through.
To be fair, you've got to encourage people like that because they're yeah. still and getting good people and good
yeah.
to people there.
But also, it's having the opportunities. And, you know, this is one of our problems in driving is we don't have people who've got the yards of, say, my folks, but they're retiring, or Caroline or Sally Warren's of this.
No, it's a difficult thing, and I think
yeah,
there's nothing there at the end. Do you know, like, what jobs there are taking?
It's quite daunting, yeah, isn't it?
It is.
What about here? Is there, okay, so you've talked about the 1950s. Have you got a 1960s? Or would it,
no.
will you skip a few? What's, yeah, what's the plan? You're going to skip some 20-year increments or something?
The next, and it might not be for a while, it won't be for a while yet, but the next sort of thought would be 80.
Okay, and that's interesting because none of us feel old enough for the 80s to be a thing yet.
But if you think,
yeah.
if in 20 years' time, 30 years' time, if we did the vehicles,
yes.
I mean, I'll be finished, but... it then will be within living memory of somebody again. But it'll be relevant for this area
yeah.
because of like the miners' strike.
Well, it's just what I was talking to Cheska the way over about politics and how this area, as much as any, was hammered
mm-hmm.
during the Thatcher years.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was all that industrial. So
yeah.
my family, granddad, miners. So with the role, I remember pulling timber out of the wood with a Dale's pony. When they were all on strike because we got a fire, they don't get a call for fire.
But it was heavy industry, the shipbuilding as well, you know, all of it
yeah.
concentrated here, the sort of this central belt going up towards Glasgow and Edinburgh. It was all the heavy industry, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, so it's a very relevant time period. But it was also, there was other things going on as well, you know, like, even just in the music,
mm-hmm.
the changes in... You know,
it's still quite relevant, 80s
yeah,
music.
But it becomes... people recognise that, so they recognise
yeah.
that tune. Or so there's avenues to explore.
That's so, really interesting. And I suppose Beamish feels like it's frozen in time, but it's not, because it's constantly moving. And as you say, there are quite distinct lines between the period sections, aren't there?
I mean, at some point, we'll run out of space.
Well, that's a long way in the future.
Well,
yeah,
won't be my problem.
No, exactly.
But it's quite clever how we do it. I mean, the 50s is just next door.
Yeah.
But the fact of it, look, sort of Edwardian.
Yeah.
So that you can't see the 50s till you actually go around the corner.
Oh, how clever. Yeah.
And that would be the same 30s, I guess. So it would probably join up to the 50s.
Yeah.
But it will just merge. It won't be just juxtaposed.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a gentle meander through.
And yeah, and we've still got horses, you know, we're still using them. There's still a place for them in all this, isn't
well,
there?
In the 80s, I mean, around here, there were still people going out, you know, with horses. I remember that. Well, so much the fruit and veg, well, they certainly had the scrap man coming around.
Yes.
And a guy with a nightgown and barrow. And,
yeah.
There was still a lot of that.
Talking of the horses, obviously, the you know, like any area, but we've talked to you about the Newcastle and the Bork story. So one was Sunderland based and one was Newcastle based. Was there a reason that one had shires and one had Percherons, or was it just so that they weren't the same? Because some of them would have Suffolk and some would have, obviously,
yeah.
Clydesdales for the up north.
Well, Vaux didn't always have Percherons. Vaux just had anything when, you know, it was, I mean, Percherons sort of caught on after the First World War, didn't it, really?
Yeah.
I mean, one of the first guys was that guy in Cambridge that we brought in the person in numbers anyway. But I don't know, maybe they just wanted something different, or maybe somebody had, again, had a connection to the war and thought they were a good animal. And
they might have seen them over there. Yeah. It's amazing there was any left, actually, after the war.
I mean, obviously, the Maxim drink that Vaux brewed was named after the Maxim gun,
mm-hmm.
which was... and then it was turned into double Maxim because they doubled the strength. So that connection with the gun in the First World War, maybe it was, I don't know, it's obviously before
it's,
my
it's
time.
It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
There'd be some reason why. Because if you look at some of the old photographs of Vaux and their grave hearses, they would be Shire, Clydesdale, Crosses, Vanover,
whatever was.
Whatever.
Yeah.
They didn't go up to a specific breed
mm-hmm.
until they started going into that. And I don't know when that did start. I think they definitely had them in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was the 30s when they started to go across.
And then, of course, in Bob's time, there was a culture of the showing. He was a big showman, wasn't he? Having them. God, when we used to have 20 or 30 drays in a class, and in those days have long gone, but that's within our living memory, isn't it?
Well, I mean, Hugh Mahoney, who was still alive, he would tell you about one from them, because he was there from he was there just before Bob's, so early 60s. Bob was about 64, I think, on your end. But Eddie's great. He's got a good memory. He tells a lot of tales about. But it's all that was his life was Vaux and the horses.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he wasn't so much into showing as Bob did.
Bob liked to show him, didn't he? That was his thing. And I'd seen him around the shows for years, as you do, the Royal and all sorts of things. He was a character.
They put his hat on top of the coffin at the.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the old guard lived and breathed the horses, but ran a tight ship in his yard and all that. You probably learned a huge amount from him.
Well, I wasn't there long enough to prepare for it. So I kind of went in and Bob wanted to, because you went as a drill lad and you had 2 years, 16 to 18. And I went from through like a bit of a work placement. And Bob wanted to keep us on.
I bet he did.
But I thought I'd go to college. And do something else. So I did, but then I ended up back horses.
So he could see in you what you didn't see in yourself at that point.
Possibly. I don't know. But whether I'd have still been there, because at 18, he tended to go across into the Bottenham plant. Or there wasn't many dray lads who stayed on past the 18. I don't know, it's because they paid them less anyway. But or whether I'd maybe he's ever going into doing the, I don't know. It's all hindsight, isn't it?
And it's not there anyway now, is it? So it's all...
Sure, yeah, it is what it is. Thinking like you'd get an education, but I went back to doing what I knew what to do.
An education, I mean, working in a film industry is only ever a stone's throw away from what we do with driving. Is this used as a film set?
Yeah, although not so much now.
Yeah.
A lot for Catholic coaches.
Yes, I knew that. I did know that, actually. That was going back a long time being used for Catherine Cookson.
But luckily in the Catherine Cookson era, they stopped using those because they used us so much that people were recognising
fair enough.
So what they used to do was build sets onto the front. So I remember once they built a set because the front of the cupboard was an alleyway. But then when you turned the corner, there was a tram coming. Then you looked again, it was going the other way, but it was just in this...
You have people out here doing history for A-level or what
We had a lot of take from certainly not necessarily since COVID, but before COVID, we had a lot of exchange people.
Yes.
So we get a lot from Sovereign Hill in Australia, the museum out there.
Oh, really? What?
And some of our guys have been out to Sovereign Hill. And then we get a lot of universities who do museum studies.
Yes.
They'll come.
Yeah.
They would placement for you and things. It's starting to pick up that again.
Mm-hmm.
But it did go by the wayside, you have to see, the COVID.
Yeah, everything did. But isn't it amazing just how much that seems like history now? I mean, it was, you got through it, you said, this was the worst thing to ever happen to us. And then suddenly you just get on with it. The resilience of sort of life and human nature, you just get on, don't you?
We were quite lucky, obviously, because we're an outdoor site.
So you weren't, you were able to keep going?
Well, we were closed
for
a portion of it.
Yeah.
For sort of the first 6 months now. It was only me doing the stove and the lad at the farm, and that was it. We had about six people on site altogether. Once you could start to grow within your locality and you could get a certain amount in, we had to put it on the ticketed only, and we could have X amount in, but we weren't allowed to be open. You couldn't go into certain buildings.
Yes, because I suppose where you're crossing over.
Yes.
It's all during test and
so
trace.
So you have one way in and out.
Yeah,
so we had to do that. We had to have hand sanitizers outside things.
Yeah.
But we were allowed to open, so we were quite lucky where we could get people.
Yeah, because there's an awful lot that couldn't come back from it.
No. And but it kept us relevant as well, because people came, first obviously there's nowhere else to go.
Yeah, fantastic.
But they wanted to come back once they got going, because the scope of pizza was happening, they could see it happening, we've been affected by it, but we haven't done too badly. And in some ways, it was quite nice for the the whole place, 5 minutes drive in from home, and it was, you could hear the birds everywhere. It was just,
but it was fun. And also, you, because of the animal welfare issue, nobody would have stopped. You had to get to your place of work, didn't you? Just no question.
Yeah.
So, tell me, who? I don't know what I meant to ask you. What's the dragon there? Was that a Nicholson one?
That was Nicholson's second drag.
Right.
That's a problem. At one point, they had three porters.
Yeah.
They've had the Venture.
Yes.
Shanks. Mm-hmm. Had Douglas Nicholson's Shanks in that one.
Mm-hmm.
And so Carl actually has a pair of them. In 1967, when the Royal Show was in Newcastle, when the Vaux had all three coaches in the show.
Oh, that's special.
And both. And his father had his chance. So Paul drove the Venture and Frank drove the Holland. And that tells you how many horses they had, and they could pull it down.
What a shame is, because, that is, people coming into coaching now wouldn't know who the Nicholsons are and what their connection was. But they were a huge family.
And the other connection is, in the coronation when he was 15, the two horses they used were the two of the old Lewis Priestman Venture coach horses at 26 and 27. And they were drafted in because the horses that his father sent down to Dartmouth, when they were doing the practice rings and they were banging the bin lids down the mall, none of them could take it. So they were shipped back, and the two old Venture horses were shipped down, and they used, which were off the Venture coach that they had from the Lewis Priestman.
A pair of good old souls, aren't they? Love them. Gotta love them. Right, sweetheart, come on. You've been very patient. You have been, haven't you? Boy, and I haven't bought your horse today.
Please don't show me.
No, you didn't get anything out of it either.
You're all right. No, we just said, this is what we do. Funny adventure for the day.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere different. Thank you for giving up your Sunday afternoon,
John. Right.
It's been great to see you. It really has.